Morning, we're continuing on in our series on the stories of David, and we're looking at 1 and 2 Samuel. Specifically this morning, we're looking at 1 Samuel chapter 17. 1 Samuel chapter 17, if you have your Bibles, you're welcome to follow along, but the story starts, and it's all about David, who we've got his statue up here. David gets sent by his father to go to the battlefield where his brothers are fighting the big battles. And he says, take this lunch. I want you to go down there. There's an area in Israel that's a ways away from Bethlehem, where David was from. It's down towards the Mediterranean coast. And it's an area called the Shephelah. It's called the Shephelah. It's just kind of a nice word to say. But it's the hill country, and if you go to Israel, there's this plain, coastal plains area along the Mediterranean, and then it starts to kind of rise, and then you have more of the mountainous kind of area around Jerusalem. So the big cities are kind of up high, heavily fortified, and then you've got the coastal plains where the Philistines had taken captive. And they would come up through the hillsides, and every season they would come up and they would battle against the Israelites, and they would try and split the kingdom. And along that, in that area, the Shephelah, there's a valley called the Valley of Elah. And the Valley of Elah was very crucial because if the Philistines could take the Valley of Elah, then they could split the kingdom and take over the Israelites, the people who God had promised. And we talked about that last week and the week before about them taking this land. So the Philistines came up this area, and the Israelites came to meet them, and they ended up meeting at this valley, the Valley of Elah, and the Philistines are camped on one ridge. The Israelites are camped on the other ridge. They're facing off against each other. And both armies knew that if they head down in the valley and try and take on the other army, they'd be fighting uphill. So neither wanted to move. They're both on the edges, on the ridges, kind of, and a stalemate develops. And they're just kind of squaring off, looking at each other. Both armies kind of eyeing each other up. Well, something that happened sometimes in those wars, and we can find precedent in wars like the Peloponnesian Wars, was they would actually choose kind of one person. They would say, okay, let's avoid heavy casualties here. We'll choose one person. You choose one person. They'll go head-to-head, mano a mano kind of thing, and whoever comes out the champion, they're the winner.
Binding arbitration.
Binding arbitration. Thanks, Peter. Yes, we did have a little bit of that, didn't we? Praise God. The schools are back in progress this week. So we've got this situation happening. And so they send down Vince Reddy. No, they send down Goliath, their champion from Gath. And he comes down and he starts kind of hurling abuses at the Israelites. He's challenging somebody to come down. Somebody come and face him. And he's bellowing at them. He's dissing them. He's trash-talking them, their God, everything about them. And the Israelites are panic-stricken. They just see this huge man. He could have been somewhere between 7 foot, 8 and 9 foot tall. And he's down there yelling at them, and they're just up there just panicked, just totally consumed with fear. They've got this giant, Goliath, and they don't know what to do about him. So David comes into this situation, and with his basket full of lunch for his brothers, he's just a young guy, out in the, you know, looking after the sheep. Could have been a teenager just sent down there on an errand. And he sees this going on. And it rouses something within him. I think all of us are built to have a cause of some sort, right? Something that kind of gets us. As we go, this is not the way it should be. David sees what's going on. He's saying, this is wrong. Why is everybody standing around here intimidated while this guy yells at us and calls down our God? And David goes, I'll fight him. I'll fight him. And Saul hears about it. Saul's pretty desperate by this time, actually. Saul's so desperate, King Saul, and Saul's not willing to go down there, that he's offered, actually, the classic kind of scenario, right? The Disney thing. He's offered the princess's hand in marriage, his daughter. I'm not sure how good she was with this, but one of my daughters is going to go to the guy who's willing to go down and fight Goliath. And you also will be exempted from taxes for the rest of your life. So pretty good motivation, right? But not good enough for them to come down. David goes, oh, is that what's going on here? Okay, I'm in. And so many of you are familiar with this story. If there's ever a story that's familiar, it's the story of David and Goliath, right, from the Bible. I was just watching the news this last week, And I heard the classic line, you know, this is a David and Goliath kind of situation. It was two corporations kind of squaring off. The underdog, the misfit against the champion kind of thing. That's how the picture looked anyhow. David went down there. You've heard the story. He first of all tries on Saul's armor. He says, this doesn't fit. This isn't right for me. And he goes down there armed with just a sling and five stones. And he runs towards Goliath and he hurls the stone. The stone hits Goliath in the head and he falls down and David finishes him off. There goes the story. This morning I want to look at some of the ideas, some of the thoughts behind that, some of the ways, I called it the art of battling giants, because I guess I could call these some principles. But more than anything, you know, like everything in life, it's an art. It's not something that applies to every situation and everything. But the reality that comes out of the story that I think is so captivating for everyone and is kind of consumed and understood by children, it's such a good children's story because you realize that life doesn't always go as you expect. Life doesn't come always kind of packaged and ready. There's giants that come along in life. There's things that come into our lives and we go, that's a hurdle. That's a challenge. They could be some things that are internally there. It could be like that song says, I'm just prone to wander, God. It could be fears. It could be anxieties. It could be things that we battle internally. It could also be kind of those things out there that we go, this is a giant in this world. This is not the way it should be. And God causes something to rise up inside of us, and we go, I don't want to go on that cause. So the idea is that battling giants really becomes a part of every person's life. We recognize that. This world isn't as it's meant to be. There's bullies. But the story also tells us that you can win with God's help. There's a powerful, kind of simple story here. With God's help, I can win. Check out how simplistic it is for David. As he's running towards the giant, this is what he yells. The whole world will know that there is a God in Israel, and everyone assembled here will know that the Lord rescues his people, but not with sword and spear. This is the Lord's battle, and he will give you to us. David came at him, as Eugene Peterson says, with a God-soaked imagination. Here was David coming saying, I know that I serve and worship a living and powerful God. David was ultimately a worship leader. And he said, you know what, I've been on the hillsides in Bethlehem there. He's been worshiping, he's been playing his harp. He's been thinking about the greatness and the wonder of God. And his mind is so captivated with the imagination of the power of God that he says, when something isn't right and evil is triumphing over what's good, I'm going to go in there and I know that God is for me and he will fight for me. It's a powerful picture. You think about how David could have been. You know, feeling like the left out little brother, like we talked about last week. I'm up here. Nobody wants to look after the sheep. I'm the poor guy looking after the sheep. I'm coming here being sent on a little errand. He goes, no, I'm not going to be defined by those. He says, it's not ultimately about me. It's about God working through me. And he powerfully went against the giant. He had a God-soaked imagination. I really believe that if we want to see the battles in our lives won, it's about coming into that place through prayer, through love. And we recognize back then it was kind of a primitive society. And our battle isn't the sword and the spear. Our battle is ultimately about using the ultimate weapon, which is love. And God invites us to that. He says, you know what? When you come in with love, it's powerful. You can stand up in strength. And the battle might be forgiveness. With the power of love and with God in your life, you can kind of fight that giant of unforgiveness or bitterness or revenge. There might be a relationship that might be split in two. There might be a big chasm, sort of the valley of Elah between you. And God says, you know what? I want you to take on that giant. Whatever the giant is, you might have faced one recently. There might be one that you might not know about yet that's coming up. But God says, I want to fight that with you. It's not about the physical kind of thing. And sometimes people get on causes that are all about the wrong thing, right? It's about being on the right kind of battle. There's battles with giants that matter the most. And these have to do with things of truth, things that we know that God says, you know, this is true. This is true about you. You can battle against the lies that come up in your heart and mind. You can battle against the kind of things that are taken as true out there but really aren't. God says, I want you to come into it and realize that you can take this on. 1 Samuel 17, verse 26 says, who is this pagan Philistine anyway? This is what David says, that he's allowed to defy the armies of the living God. It's like the Israelites all thought, this battle's against us. It's just us. But David's going, no, And this is how God worked in the former covenant. He says, I am working through these people. This is about God and His honor. Is there something that we see today that we go, this isn't right? And maybe you're already in that battle. God wants you to know, I am there for you. If you're battling the battles that matter most in this world, the things of, like we sung about this morning, trampling on injustice, God says, I want to be there. This cause matters to me. When you think about Jesus, he was the ultimate warrior. When he came down to this earth, he battled Satan, he battled sin, he battled hell and death. And he came out as a winner. And our ultimate model is God. We talked about David, how David's a little bit of a mirror of us, right? He's not the ultimate model, but he was sort of he kind of points us to the person of Jesus. The person of Jesus who says, you know what? These things matter in your life, and I'm here for you. I'm alive, and I'm in your life. David would have fought with doubt and fear, those kind of internal battles. But ultimately, he battled the battles that most mattered. And when you look at the story, throughout the story of David, you find that the thing that made people kind of follow and love David was that he was the one who fought the Lord's battles. It was like he had a higher cause in his life. He was giving his life to something. You know, whatever it is in our lives, it might be in an area of a marriage that we say, you know what, I'm going to give my life to this. I really am going to battle to see love win out, to see forgiveness, to see righteousness go out. It might be in a dating relationship to say, I'm going to battle for purity. It might be in finances to say, you know what, I know this is a battle, but I'm going to trust God in my finances, and I'm going to live generously, and I'm going to believe in a generous God. God says, I want to fight those battles with you, for you. You know, when I had a chance to visit Israel last year, and it was interesting because the leader brought us to this hill country called the Shephelah. And he talked about Jesus as the rabbi and how Jesus had these followers that would come along and follow him. And, you know, and that was common in those days. There were rabbis that would have followers. That was kind of the way of education back then, not as much in the classroom, but much more kind of follow this rabbi. And one of the questions that the rabbi would ask his followers, which every follower understood, was, how's your Shephelah? How's your Shephelah? Essentially meaning, how's the battle going? How's the spiritual battle going in your life, both internally and externally? God says to us, how goes the battle? I want you to know that I can win. I am for you and I am with you. And David fought the Lord's battles. But you know, initially, even in this situation, it didn't go all that easy for David. There's a very interesting kind of subplot that happened kind of before he went down in the valley and fought the Goliath. And that had to do with his family and his siblings. And the story is found in verse 26 of Samuel 17, where he says, this is what people told him as he showed up. He says, what's going on here? There's this giant, he's yelling abuses at us, and everybody's just standing here full of fear. And this is what he has responded to him. The king has offered a huge reward to anyone who kills him. This is in point three, if you want to pull that up on the screen. He will give that man one of his daughters for a wife, and the man's entire family will be exempted from paying taxes. So David asked the soldier standing by, what will a man get for killing this Philistine and ending his defiance of Israel? Who is this pagan Philistine anyway, that he is allowed to defy the armies of the living God? And these men gave David the same reply. They said, yes, that is the reward for killing him. And here's the thing. But when David's oldest brother, Eliab, heard David talking to the men, he was angry. What are you doing around here anyway? He demanded. What about those few sheep you're supposed to be taking care of? I know about your pride and deceit. You just want to see the battle. You know, there's a classic kind of older brother thing happening here. And it's a metaphor, really, for those who would say, you know, I can see your motivations. I see what you're about. Don't be so heroic here. Don't try and do anything. You know, aren't you supposed to be out there doing that little duty that you're supposed to be doing kind of thing? And David leaned in. He said, I'm just asking a question. And he kept going down the battle. You know, in all of our lives, when we go against things that seem to be accepted as this is the norm, whether it be just something internally and we go, you know what, everybody kind of does this or is succumbing to this or whatever it might be, or this situation, We're going to have people go, well, that's just normal. Don't try and be too, you know, heroic. Don't try and battle it. But David said, no, I believe in God's power and in his help. I can do this. Others will question motives. And it's very interesting, actually, in this story that David, his motives, as we've talked about, weren't always completely pure. He does ask the question, so what will a guy get for killing this Philistine? I think that's a key question. He's going, what? You mean there's a princess involved and there's some money and tax-exempt status kind of involved in this thing? You know, oftentimes we come at everything with mixed motives. And I think there's something to kind of recognizing that and saying, you know, that in my humanity, that's just me. And in some way or another, we can say, God, I want you to kind of work through those motives. I want you to purify them. And certainly over the course of time, God did work on David's motivation. Spending all those years out in the wilderness has a way of doing that. But in this situation, David was like, I want the princess, I want the money, and I want God's name to be honored and glorified. And he went in there, and God was with him and for him. If we wait till we have perfect motivations, we'll never do anything. I think it's just about going in there and saying, God, you know what? You are for me and with me. God works with imperfect people. And you might be sitting there today and going, you know, I mean, looking at this situation, and yes, there's this giant, and there's me, and it might be somewhat convoluted, but with God's help, and if you say, God, I want your love to win out in this situation. I want your peace. I want your joy. I want your goodness and your prosperity to go forward in this. Don't be intimidated by those other voices that say you can't do it or your motivations are all wrong. David just went out there and said, I'm going for it. There's something to be said to that, even in the midst of that, and to recognize and embrace that it won't always go smoothly when you go into situations where you're facing giants. Not everybody's going to be for you and with you. But God will show you the path through. And he will build on past successes. One of the things I think when we look at giants is we think, okay, this is so enormous, this is so big, and maybe it's a cause that you look out there where you see injustice in the world. God builds on past successes. As we've been true to God and work through the successes of each day that are put before us, each of the giants that come along, he will kind of give us the stone for that day. I think that's so significant. Because sometimes we look at this thing, we say, it's so big, it's so awesome, I could never go there. God says, you know what? Build on the success of this day. David, while he was out there looking after sheep, before he got onto the main stage here where we read about him in Scripture, he tells a story about how a lion came and a bear came, and he looked after the sheep. He said, you know, this matters. I'm going to, you know, take this sheep, this lion or this bear. I'm going to rescue the lamb from its mouth. David built on things. And, you know, in our spiritual lives too, God sees where we're at, and he doesn't expect us to run when we're still crawling. You know, when you look at the development of a child, they crawl, they walk, they run. Same thing in our faith and in our courage and in how God works in our lives. He kind of brings us from success to success, and he builds. I think that's really powerful for us because we can look at things and go, you know what, that's too big, that's too great. You just think about that day. Say, you know what, today this is what I'm going to go after. There's a threshold of pain and risk in all of our lives, right? And working through that on the day that it faces us is important. Giant faith steps are built on past successes. Another, I think, very significant point in this whole story is that giants aren't nearly as invincible as they appear. Oftentimes we look at something, we say, you know, that could never change. You might look at a situation, a relationship, something in your family or in your work situation, you go, it'll never change. It's just too big. It's too stuck. It's the way it is. It's too powerful. It might not be as it appears. There's a wonderful little book that I picked up during my sabbatical, written by Malcolm Gladwell. He's a New York Times best author, and you might have heard some of his past books have been talked about quite a bit, Outliers, Blink, and The Tipping Point. Well, he's written a book called David and Goliath, and he really uses that metaphor. He introduces the book with the story of David and Goliath, and then he goes on to talk about how underdogs and misfits are the kind of people that oftentimes see things a little bit different, come at it a different way. And oftentimes the giants aren't as invincible as they appear. He goes through stories like the civil rights kind of movement in the States and how it looked like it would never, you know, change in the South. He actually talks about classroom and education and size of classroom and some of the factors there. It's very interesting. Northern Ireland and the troubles there. Goes through a number of different situations. He actually goes through situations of personal kind of victory. And he actually brings up the story of Wilma Dirksen in Winnipeg, of all places, who's went through tragedy with her daughter being captured. And then coming to a place of forgiveness rather than revenge. And how powerful that is against that giant of revenge kind of thing. But in it, he talks about how oftentimes those giants aren't really as awesome as they appear. And he proposes this theory that many people would say that Goliath may have had a serious medical condition. He looks and sounds like someone suffering from what is called acromegaly. I'm not sure if I pronounced that right. Acromegaly, a disease caused by a benign tumor of the pituitary gland. The tumor causes an overproduction of human growth hormone, which would explain Goliath's extraordinary size. The tallest person in history, Robert Wadlow, suffered from acromegaly. At his death, he was 8 foot 11 inches and apparently still growing. And furthermore, one of the common side effects of acromegaly is a vision problem. Pituitary tumors can grow to the point where they compress the nerves leading to the eyes, with the result that people with acromegaly often suffer from severely restricted sight and diplopia, or double vision. There's kind of a theory there. He says, why are you coming to me with sticks, plural, of David? Well, David was just, you know, carrying one stick. It could be that he was saying, you know, come closer to me. Come closer to me. I can't see you yet. And he's got an armor bearer that comes down, and it could be that that armor bearer was really just an attendant sort of helping lead the blind down into the valley. So from a distance, he looked like this huge giant and invincible, when actually, when you get up close, the powerful and the strong, is what he says, are not always what they seem. You might be facing something in your life, a financial situation, a relational situation, something that you're involved in a cause out there, and it seems like it's invincible. It'll never come down. It'll never change. Oftentimes, things are different than they appear. God will use, and this is my final point, the authentic you. I think oftentimes we look at things and we say, you know what, if God's going to fight this thing, then somehow maybe I've got to become somebody different. Now, certainly there might be some new tools and some new ways of learning things, but God honors who we are. And I think what we do is when we look at God and we look at it, we saw ourselves, we say, what is authentically me in this situation that I'm facing? You know, our situation is obviously very different than this fellow that Paul was describing in North Africa. But what he is doing is powerful through us and in us. And one of the principles that we can take away from this situation with David is, initially the experts said, put on a bronze helmet, put on a coat of mail. You got to go in there and fight hand-to-hand combat. And David initially kind of caved to that. And he put it on and he says, I'm not used to these, he says. And he goes down and you see him kneeling by the brook. And he's doing the most authentic thing before God that he could do. He's honoring what God has done and put in his life. And it's actually the thing that is most effective to fight this kind of giant. Coming at Goliath from a distance and using a sling in a skilled way was exactly what God needed and what he used it. And whatever giants God calls you to come up against, whatever giants might come into your life, the resources are there. God has empowered you. He has worked in your life, in your history, in your past. He has shaped you a certain way. And one of the wonderful things that we have as Christ followers is the community of faith, is being in community with others where we go, you know what, together we can do this. That was God's vision of the church. It's not the Lone Ranger kind of thing, I'm going in this all alone. It's gathering others together. Saying, you know what, we're going to pray about this. We're going to come together on this. There's others with like hearts, and we're taking this on together. It's a wonderful thing when we see that the battle belongs to the Lord. We had an anxious and demoralized people of Israel there on the valley, on the ridge. And here's David. And he was modest enough and bold enough to reject the king's way of doing things. Modest enough and bold enough to reject that and say, this is what God's put in my heart. This is what I'm going to do. God's call is for us to be in that kind of battle of the Lord's, whatever that may. not to take up the weapons of this world, but to take up the weapons of God, in power of love, in forgiveness, in peace, in strength. God says, I will walk you through it. I want to close with a bit of a benediction. And don't do this often, but Psalm 121, and it's not a David psalm, but it's a psalm nonetheless that just kind of captures us this morning and invites us to say, I'm going to go into this week, whatever it is that God that is there, whatever giants I might face, be they small or huge and intimidating, God is with me and for me, and he is on my side in this, and he can give me the strength and the courage to go in there together. I'm going to invite the worship band up, and we'll close with a song after this. Psalm 121 says, I look up to the mountains. Does my help come from there? My help comes from the Lord, who made heaven and earth. He will not let you stumble. The one who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. The Lord himself watches over you. The Lord stands beside you as your protective shade. The sun will not harm you by day, nor the moon by night. The Lord keeps you from all harm and watches over your life. The Lord keeps watch over you as you come and go, both now and forever. I want to invite you to stand, and we'll close with a song.